My name's Warren Thornton. I am an investigative journalist and geopolitical analyst. I was a soldier for many years and spent many years in war-torn countries, in amongst civil wars, seeing how people were propagating these wars and causing all sorts of human misery. And I was asked today to talk to you about white phosphorus, which I am happy to do. Now, there will be lots and lots of reports from many people across the world, including the Americans and the Israelis, saying that, of course, white phosphorus, they have nothing to do with it. It is complete nonsense. They have everything to do with it. Now, let me just explain where I am coming from here and why what white phosphorus is so terrible. There is a place in America called the U.S. Army Pine Bluff Arsenal, and this is where white phosphorus is stored. Now, the white phosphorus, this is in, as I say, a military facility in Arkansas, which is then transferred through Bayer, Monsanto. Of course, the German company, as you know, and Monsanto, you may have heard of as the people who sort out all your seeds. This is then sold through these third parties to the Israel Chemical Company. Now, white phosphorus is the same stuff that America denied they used in Fallujah. It is being used in Lebanon. It is being used in Gaza. Now, the army code for this, when it's being dropped in Fallujah, was called Whiskey Pete. So, if they wanted to keep their heads down and they knew that this stuff was going to be launched, this would be launched from helicopters, and it is particularly nasty. Let me explain a little about what white phosphorus does and what white phosphorus is. White phosphorus comes down, first of all, as a blinding light. You see all these lots of white, looks like fireworks coming down, and when they hit the ground, they glow and explode with this huge sort of blinding white impact. And everybody thinks that that is what does the damage. It doesn't. It is a cloud that literally comes out of the rocket head when it explodes. Now, this cloud is a vapor, and literally it will burn if you have, say, a mask on, an oxygen mask on. It will burn that to your skin. It will literally melt it to your skin. It reacts to water. It reacts to air. And of course, the only thing that you can possibly use to get this off of you is wet mud. It's about the only thing that is effective against white phosphorus. And of course, by then it's far, far too late. Once this is inhaled, this allows literally your inside organs, including your throat and your stomach, to burn from the inside and blister. And what it does is it suffocates you because the blistering is so bad that it literally melts your skin to your bones. It melts literally completely. And of course, at Fallujah, there was many of these. This is now being used and is being used in great detail. And just to go through some of the effects of it. It's highly reactive. It's a waxy solid that ignites spontaneously in air, producing a dense, irritating smoke containing phosphorus oxides. And the direct skin contact causes intensely painful burn, second and third degree burns with yellowish necrotic tissue and slow healing due to its liquid solubility, which allows it to deeply embed itself in your tissue. Now, burns can reignite on exposure to oxygen, requiring careful treatment. Water and saline, the World Health Organization will tell you, works, but it really doesn't. The inhalation of the smoke itself irritates the eyes, the respiratory tract, potentially causing coughing, headaches, and that's just a tiny, tiny
Well, look,
problem.
there's a couple of things to ask you, Warren. One is, what's the legal and international agreements around this? And secondly, is there evidence it's been used? Where is that evidence?
Yeah, absolutely. It is utterly illegal to use. There are many bodies that have been documented by the UN where these people are now dead that have been killed by white phosphorus. There is a wonderful documentary called Fallujah, the Hidden Massacre. Now, an Italian company did a documentary on this where they actually spoke to the soldiers who took part in these white phosphorus bombings in Fallujah. And of course, the Israelis are now being sold this, and there is a paper trail to
So,
this.
I mean, is there evidence this has been used over the last year or so by the Israelis anywhere?
Yes, absolutely. It's been used in Lebanon, in a place called Tyre, in Lebanon, which is on the coast, and it's also been used in Gaza. I've sent you a picture, Tony, of the phosphorus being used from a helicopter, and this has been used extensively. I can also provide you paperwork to show that this stuff has come from America through Bayer, Monsanto, onto the Israeli chemical company itself. And the problem they have, of course, is this is a banned substance. Now, it is used. There's no question it's been used. It's been used in the Russia-Ukraine war by both sides, I have to say. And of course, this is a banned substance in any world. This stuff is banned. It's something we wish we could disinvent. It can also cause pulmonary edema, by the way, severe abdominal pain. It is. The chronic effects of it are quite incredible. You can get something called a fossae jaw, which is a necrosis of the jawbone, which literally causes the jawbone to literally deteriorate right inside your skin. And I've sent you a couple of these sort of, how can I put it, pictures that you can have a look at. It does gastrointestinal injury, respiratory. The outcomes are absolutely fateful. It is harmful to all humans by exposure. White phosphorus is absolutely, it is banned from anybody using it.
So,
The
is there any redress, for those who are illegally using this? The Israelis specifically, you accused, maybe the Americans. What about the Brits? Have we used it?
yes, we've used it. We've used it. The Chemical Weapons Convention, which is the CWC, Article 2 of the Conventional Weapons, says that because of the chemical action on life processes, it would violate Protocol 3 on the use of incendiary weapons or convention of certain conventional weapons, which is called the CCCW. If it is literally, if you use this at all, then it has to be an investigation by the World Health Organization and the UN to establish the illegal use of it. And as such, Israel are not allowing the UN to conduct any investigations.
Oh, maybe the Lebanese could.
Yeah, exactly that. If they could get into those parts of the Lebanon, but where it has been used, Tony, they can't get in.
Well, I mean, actually, Tyre is still accessible.
Yeah, not while it's being bombed. You see, the trouble is, if anybody from the World Health Organization, UNESCO, the UN, goes into anywhere like Gaza or into any of the areas where they've bombed and they're about to bulldoze, they are immediately attacked themselves. There is documented evidence of this happening to UN peacekeepers and UN, shall we say, people, including paramedics, 17 of them, of which were working for the UN, who were massacred at the time on a road, a darkened road, and they were just pulled over and absolutely executed.
Right. Well, I mean, white phosphorus is not the only weapon like this. There is also, for example, the thermobaric weapons, fuel air bombs. Can you just tell us what they are? Because they're also supposed to be illegal.
Yeah, thermobaric bombs are basically, how can I put this as nicely as possible? Thermobaric bombs are absolutely terrible. They're highly destructive explosives that use atmospheric oxygen to create intense heat. And so let's go through it. They're also called vacuum bombs, fuel air explosives, or aerosol bombs. The first is a small initial charge that disperses a cloud of fuel, such as ethylene, propylene, ammonium nitrate, or powdered aluminium. Into the air. Now, this aerosol mixes with atmospheric oxygen and a secondary charge ignites it, producing a massive fireball and a sustained pressure wave. The defining acts of this, and that they shouldn't be being used at all, is of course you get pulmonary problems, full thickness burns, chemical inhalation injuries, especially in enclosed or semi-closed spaces like buildings, tunnels, bunkers. The blast actually reflects off the wall. Now, get this. The temperatures can reach 3,500 degrees Fahrenheit, 3,500 degrees Celsius, which is over 6,000 degrees Fahrenheit in some modern munitions. And it literally vaporizes matter in the immediate area. It's basically called the mother of all bombs or the father of all bombs. And the delivery methods of this are normally with artillery shells, hand grenades, shoulder launch rockets, and guided missiles can also do this. And under international law, they're also banned. There are war crimes and violations. There are reports from the conflicts in Gaza and other regions that these weapons have been used to obliterate human bodies and infrastructure, leaving little behind.
Well,
It's one of the most.
there are some allegations that it was this kind of device that was used as a massive bomb in Beirut Harbour.
Yes, yeah. I mean, there are people that are saying this, obviously, because of the huge explosion that was used there, but there would be traces. It's rather like when they said that they'd use a nuclear bomb, of course, inside that they dropped a small nuclear device to try and blow up the underground tunnels that are hiding the enriched uranium that the Iranians have got. But they didn't. They used these mother of all bombs or thermobaric bombs to try and blast their way through, which didn't do it because obviously there's a mountain just outside of a place called Yazd, which is in Iran. And of course, the rock is so dense there, they can't blast their way through it. But it didn't stop them using them. And you're absolutely right, Tony. It didn't stop them using in the tanks. And there's every chance that one of these was used, shall we say, instead of everybody said all the fertilizer went up. And don't get me wrong, that goes up well. But there's every chance that that was used and triggered from inside the actual facility itself.
Yeah, well, whilst we're on exotic weapons, what about the idea of the thermic, I think they're called tectonic weapons, this idea of having a nuclear weapon or something similar, very, very low underground near a fault line in the Earth's crust, and then using that to trigger an earthquake. Is that feasible?
Sorry about that. We have earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and of course they can use these now. Tectonic weapon, of course, is designed, as you rightly point out, and it was literally put together by a guy called Alexei Nikolaev in 1992, as describing it as the accumulated tectonic energy that could induce a destructive seismic event. So the whole idea was that they would place one of these in the earth and then they would trigger it, which theoretically a significant charge of elastic energy in the earth's crust, which could be released to trigger an earthquake. There were many of these secret programs in the old Soviet Union conducted known as Mercury and Volcano. They were the two rather silly names they had for it, but these were the experts that put them, and they turned around and said, well, you can't possibly do this. But the potential for human-induced seismic activity showed that in 1978 there was convention on the prohibition of military and any other hostile use of environmental modification techniques to prohibit the use of these environmental modification techniques to cause earthquakes and tsunamis. But of course, these things still go on, and the experimentation still goes on.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, where's the evidence? Either for the, if you're going to prohibit something, it's very difficult to get evidence that one of these tectonic weapons has been used. But equally, it's difficult to prove that one has. I mean, obviously, the United States is rather at loggerheads with the Venezuelans over the last year, beginning with the kidnap of the president earlier on, and Trump now talking about, well, we've got loads and loads of petroleum now. We've pretty much got Venezuela's petroleum too here. We don't really need the Gulf petroleum. Thank you very much. So is there actually any evidence? How can you get evidence one way or the other?
As they say, each of these things have an isotope. They have an isotopic presence that basically is literally registered. Every isotope that they use
Yeah, but it
has.
could be maybe miles under the ground. How on earth are you going to get hold of a sample?
Yeah, exactly that. It is very, very. It is one of the reasons that people are digging into it quite heavily, because you can't have any real, iron cast evidence until you actually dig some up. And therein lies the problem. Unless, of course, you have some of the waste from the radioactive blast, because there will still be some.
Yeah, what about the news about the Chinese building these massive, well, I mean, we jokingly call them inflatable battleships, but they're obviously made of metal, but there's actually nothing inside them. They're just battleship or cruiser or destroyer or frigate shaped?
Yeah, absolutely. They've not just done this with battleships, Tony. They've done it with tanks. They've done it with aeroplanes as well. And they've actually given some to the Iranians, where it's been proven that these work because literally from the satellite photos, they look like real planes. They look like real battleships. And of course, the Americans have had a bit of egg on their face in Iran, by bombing what we would call some of these inflatable. And the Chinese use them all the time. Some of the designs are absolutely incredible. I've actually seen them with my own eyes, because obviously being here in the Philippines and going to the Chinese embassy from time to time, you get to see, they give you these demonstrations where they show, look, this is our new thing that we've designed. And that goes from anywhere from drones that can literally make sure they don't bump into bamboo when they're threading their way through the woods to these inflatable dinghies, these inflatable boats, these inflatable tanks, and these inflatable planes.
And what do you think Trump is up to in the Middle East? He seems to be restarting. I mean, I've been jokingly, rather with my dark sense of humor, referring to like the 20th week of World War III. It doesn't seem to be going away, despite the lack of interceptor missiles and despite the World Cup.
Yeah, it almost seems as though America waited till they were out of the World Cup and then restarted the war, doesn't it? But this is all down to the nonsense that is going on, where of course they didn't achieve the two biggest things they set out to achieve was getting hold of the nuclear, and that was a secondary thought. But the whole idea was to regime change Iran, to overthrow the government. This has been America's sort of wet dream, if you like, for the last 40 odd years. Ever
Well, I
since
would
the
say
overthrow.
it's more Israel's wet dream that they've
Oh,
managed
it is.
to, manage to take Donald Trump down the garden path.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, he's been led all the way down the primrose path. If you receive $200 million from Miriam Adelson, there's a price to pay. Be absolutely in no doubt whatsoever about that. But there are many people that argue America control Israel or Israel control America. It is all down to the bankers at the end of the day. If you fund this, the money actually never leaves America. Israel get the weapons, and then of course the Israel lobby give money to senators to vote for more money, for more war, for more weapons. And you're absolutely right. Trump is completely owned. This is Israel's dream as well. They don't want a strong Iran in the Middle East. It is absolutely. They want to be the number one power, and they see Iran as a massive threat. And of course, Iran are just turning around saying, leave us alone. They want to do a North Korea. Leave us alone. Let us get on with our lives. But it is the overthrowing of that government that will make Israel feel safer, if you know what I mean.
Well,
And
it
America.
seems to me by trying to overthrow it, it's going to make things far worse for the Israelis.
Oh,
And
yes.
any sensible Jewish resident or any other resident might think of just leaving Israel because it's getting more. Anyway, look, finally on the Russia-Ukraine, the Russians seem to have changed their tune over the last couple of weeks since this NATO summit. They're now saying, well, there's no point in negotiating. We've realised that it's just a matter of time before we're going to start having to destroy specific targets. There's also the possibility that Lindsey Graham was killed the other day whilst he was in Ukraine at a drone factory by the Russians.
Yeah, I wouldn't hold too much out on the Lindsey Graham, by the way. Our sources, and we have some very good sources in America, say that he died at his home. But there was a mystery caller, a young gentleman of 23 years of age. I'm going to leave that up to everybody else to speculate. But that's who made the call from his home. And that's an exclusive for you. On the Ukraine-Russia problem we have here, is that Russia have literally gone, okay, everything that was agreed in Alaska was a complete lie by America. We can do this militarily. Now they have just taken two cities called Konstantinivka and Liman, which are both almost double the size of Hull. And when people say the Americans and everybody else say that the Russians are going nowhere, well, the Russians have captured 150,000 square kilometers since the start of the war. That is the size of England and Wales combined. And of course, when you turn around to the Ukrainians or you turn around to the Americans or indeed anybody in the West and say, please name one city that the Ukrainians have captured since the summer of 2023 of a population of, say, 20,000 or more, they can't name one, whereas Russia had. And of course, the bodies are piling up. Now, people are saying the disparity between when they exchange the dead bodies and they meet in Doha once a month, they have representatives from Ukraine and Russia meet in Doha. And they sort out an exchange of the bodies and or prisoners. And of course, when the bodies come back, there's always 1,000 Ukrainians and about 50 Russians. Now, everybody turns around and says, well, the reason there is more Ukrainians is because the Russians are picking them up as the Ukrainians retreat. But we keep hearing that there's a stalemate and the Russians aren't moving forward. Now, both things can't be true, Tony.
No, they can't. Look, what is your estimate of the casualties on both sides of that conflict?
Okay, so very, very simply here. Ukraine, since the start of the war, since the summer of 2023, now this is admitted by Ukraine itself, they had 1 million men in the army, roughly 1 million men, 900,000 active soldiers, and about 100,000 mercs. And then, of course, they had literally another 1.1 million in reserve, but they've had a total of 4.1 million with the mobilizations. They've had three mobilizations. They say 1.8 million. We say it's around 1.4, and about 400,000 have been beaten up and thrown onto the front line. And of course, in total, they've had 4.1 million men. Now, there are 700,000 that have been injured. There's 250,000 deserters, and the Russians are sitting on about 15,000 of these Ukrainian prisoners. So where is the other 2.4 million missing, supposedly dead? Where have they suddenly gone? On January the 1st, the Ukrainians themselves released the data that they only had 900,000 men left. Now, they've been losing around about 1,500 men a day. Sounds a lot, but when you look at it over a 1,000-kilometer front line, it works out at about 1.5 men per day. Now, if you times 1,500 soldiers by the amount of days of the Ukrainian war, which is about 1,600 days, comes out at about 2,380,000. So it all sounds about right and it all fits. They have to account for where the 2.3 million missing Ukrainians have gone.
And what
Now,
about on the
here's
Russian side?
on the Russian side, you're looking at about 8 to 1. So you're looking at about 290,000, around about anywhere between 8 to 1 to 9.4 to 1 are the best estimates that we have. And that means that Russia would have lost close to around 300,000 men.
Okay, well, anyway, Warren, can you just remind listeners whereabouts they can find and follow you?
Yes, certainly. You can find us over at Warren Thornton on Patreon or warrenthornton.com. And of course, we're Monday to Friday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. with a new show. And then on Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. And of course, every so often, the wonderful Tony Gosling comes in and graces us with his presence.
Well, he's probably telling you lies. He normally is. He's very unreliable. But
I
so even
think
on a
not.
Friday, if people are particularly enthusiastic at 6 o'clock, they could switch over to have a listen to you after an hour of our show. Anyway, Warren Thornton, thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you, Tony.